right now. It's just coming up to 11:29 on Phoenix 98 FM. And I'm joined in the studio. You heard my guest. We're having a little chat before that Sam Brown track. Joined in the studio by Pete Adams, a.k.a. Dirty Boots, to talk about his debut album, which is 10 tracks written and produced by Pete. He's written and produced for a host of famous musicians and worked with the likes of Stevie Wonder, Madonna, Misha Paris, Al Jarreau, to name a few. And he's toured all over the world, and he's got an impressive array of work. So thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's lovely to see you in the studio. We've been having a good... I'm sorry I've been chatting so much. I'm, like, well excited.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you.
So before we talk, because you've worked with some amazing people and you've got such a fantastic career, tell us about the first track you ever purchased.
The first, believe it or not, the first album I ever bought was Ziggy Stardust by David Bowie. I had to have it because it was almost like a competition in the house, because he was so popular with my older brothers and sisters, and they wouldn't let me play the album.
And there's five of you, is there?
There was five of us, three older sisters and older brother. So I got all that music from them. They were the people buying the records and listening to the stuff, and I was just a kid absorbing it all.
And is anyone else in the family musical, or is it just you?
They're all musical, but they've not taken it into work or career or anything like that, but they're all musical. Yeah, they've all got they're all played at some stage.
Did you ever have like a family band? Or
no, not a family band. No, we did sing around the piano. My mum played as well, so yeah. But, yeah, I think I was the only one that was able to take it, you know, to a professional level. All artistic. Two of my sisters became sort of head art teachers and stuff like that. My brother went into design.
Now, you play, let me have a look at the list, guitar, piano, tuba, drums.
I did, yeah.
Anything else? Not all at the same time.
I did play tuba.
Yeah.
I actually played tuba for a very short amount of time because when I was at school, we did the A-level music, and I needed another instrument above grade 5 to eliminate the history paper, which I was no doubt going to fail at. And so I took on tuba, and I passed grade 6 with distinction in about 6 weeks. Just desperation, really. But we did used to play in the big band, and I've still got a very good friend of mine, Pete Jackson, who I see a lot from that era, from that time at school, and we used to play tuba together side by side, you know, go and do things like Central Hall, Westminster with the school and stuff like that. But the school was great. It was Chase Cross School, and it had a great music department, lots of bands, so we were very well tutored.
You were saying Chick Corea.
It completely changed the way I heard music, for sure, because you were hearing harmonies and melodies and rhythms that you'd never heard before. This was around 14, 15 year old time. So again, it was Pete, my friend Pete, who brought the album in. His dad was a very well respected jazz pianist around London at that time. So he had access to all that information. He brought the record. I remember our music teacher used to go up the pub for a pint of Guinness and a smoke on the pipe.
Yeah.
And he would leave us with Tchaikovsky, and then we would rip off Tchaikovsky, and on went Chick Corea. So that's how that happened.
Are you a musician notate, or do you do everything from sort of feel? How does it work for you?
Talk classically, so I can read and play. I don't read as well as maybe some of the great readers, but I can read and play. And but improvisation was always the thing that got me into trouble.
I can see Mike got into trouble a bit. Just looking at Joey in the corner, she's going to back me up on that one. So we're going to play a track. We're going to talk about the album a little bit more, Dirty Boots.
Yeah.
But we're going to play a track from the album. It's track number 4. Tell us about it, and tell us who's played on it as well.
Yeah, the album itself is a concept album. The guy is the chivalrous hombre. He's the character, the protagonist in the story. As you go through, this is track 4, Step On It. He's just got off a ship in South America, and he's in a fast car. On this track, it's obviously me on piano and keyboards, and also I programmed the drums on this track, and it features Eric Apapule on guitar and Bob McKay on flute.
Lovely. Here we go.
Don't
when you went into the studio to record that beautiful tune,
yes,
do you put the drums down first, or do you all kind of play along?
Some tracks you play together, but some tracks are through the method of step recording, where you, you know, you work on the drum track, then you work on the bass, but you've always got in the background the tune in your head, or you've got a, you know, you've got it down the tune, and then you work around the tune. But on this project, I was leaving it open for their interpretation.
Yeah.
And then I would post-produce. Mm. After having all the information that I needed, I would then choose what I liked.
And
it's
the
fun of it.
Do you have to leave? Do you have, when you record something like this, do you have to sort of walk away and leave it and then go back and have
for sure, listen? You need to break. You need to break away and get fresh ears. Go and listen to something else or do something else. I've got to tell you, the whole album, most of the album's done on a laptop.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I know, it's broken the spell, hasn't it?
Has really. It's ruined it for me, no Joe. Even Joe's looking shocked in the corner.
But it's taking live music and putting, you know, you put it into your laptop to so you can play with it and make it as pretty as you want to make it.
You can never get away from having a band with live musicians, because you
absolutely
don't know where it can go on a gig.
No, that's right.
And a backing track won't do the extra chorus or do the extra bits and pieces.
No, that's true. But that's the, in a way, that's the beauty of this. I mean, I'm experiencing the live field, so I was able to create a live, you know, everybody thinks it sounds like a band. My experience of having played in so many bands, I can interpret that on. But it's all live playing, of course. It's just you've got control over it more.
Control, that's what we need.
Control.
The 3 Degrees Orchestra, take us back to that.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's going way back. That's one of my first gigs, where I was actually in the house band at the Circus Tavern at the time, and the 3 Degrees came to the Circus Tavern. That was very exciting, because they were quite a major band. It's, you know, full brass and blah, it's amazing. A few months later, I was out playing in a pub, and the people from the 3 Degrees band were in there watching me. And I didn't know that, but next minute you get a call.
Wow.
So, yeah, it just happens like that. So, kids, get out there and play.
Derek Nash came in, who is an amazing... He's got so many stories. Saxophone player.
Yes.
And he came in a couple of weeks ago, and you can check out that interview online if you want to. And you've worked, you know, Derek really well.
Very good friend of mine. Mm. Very good friend. Very nice guy. Great saxophone player.
Yeah.
Runs lots of outfits that that I dip in and out of through my... We've probably known each other 30 years.
Really? Well, you both don't look old enough.
Well, exactly.
Surely not.
Yes. Just lots of sleep.
There we go, Derek. Good morning, dear. Also, 1984, you joined the band Talk Talk.
Oh, yes. Talk Talk. Yes. That
Can't
was,
miss that one out.
Oh, no. That, what a great band. Not around anymore, really, sadly, due to... They don't want to be. But left a legacy of fantastic tunes. And I was very privileged to have met and worked with them over a period of a year and a half, touring the world. It's my life. Do. I love that.
Yeah.
So we did all that, and we toured the world with that, and that was a Melody Maker. The Melody Maker was around at the time.
Yeah.
The magazine paper for musicians, and that was one of the ads in the back.
Mm.
And we didn't even have a home phone, so I used to go round to the phone box around the corner.
Yeah.
And they'd call me back on the phone box.
Well, it's the good old days when people couldn't contact you. You could be, I'm sorry, I'm really busy, a bit home watching telly.
Yeah, totally.
Well, it wasn't any daytime telly, was it?
There was nothing to do.
I'm showing the age now. There wasn't. I don't think you had schools programmes, didn't you, probably?
Yeah. No, I did like a schools programme. But, that whole time was very different to now. There was no communication, so you were fighting to get out there and... find those gigs.
Now, we're going to talk about some of the artists that you've worked with. Before we do that, we're going to play another track.
Oh, thank you.
This is track number 7, called Meet Me in the Lobby. How did this one come about?
I had to make it several times, really, this track. I was never quite happy with it, and eventually got there, and it features Ash Sohn, plays drums on it, and he does the voice.
Mm.
He's the drummer on the voice. You'll always see him. He's also popping up with lots of artists recently, you know, Delamitri, and he plays on lots of people's records, you know, that are currently out. So he's a great drummer. You'll love the drums on this one.
And it's good. The thing is, I always say to people in the kit, you don't have to be mega, mega famous. I think sometimes people have got this thing, you've got to be really famous. There are so many top-class musicians that can go and do a gig, play in front of thousands of people, get paid loads of money, and go home, and they don't have any of the rubbish that gets printed in the papers. What a great life.
I've got to tell you, right, when I first started working with Cat Stevens, right, this was 10 years ago, and we were working on new material at the time in a little studio in Kensal Road. And we used to go down to Sainsbury's. And I'd be walking around Sainsbury's with Cat Stevens, and I'd be looking around going, can anybody see this? Is somebody pinch me?
See, that's when you need one of the mobile phone, take a picture.
That's the fast way to the sack.
Yes, probably. Right, here we go. This is track number 7, taken from the album Dirty Boots. Here is Meet Me in the Lobby. Number 7, meet in the lobby.
Meet in the lobby.
There we go.
He's met this guy in the lobby.
What lovely, that's fantastic drumming, I love that. That's like, do you know what it is? I'll tell you what it is. I'm not saying take your clothes off, I was going to say take your roof off. What am I saying, Joe? What am I saying? It's like in your car driving. I love putting on music in my car because that's when I really chill out and listen.
I should
be really concentrating on the driving, to be honest.
No, you can't.
It's very summery. Summary.
It's getting there, isn't it? It's getting towards that time of year now.
So
we need it, don't we?
Do you write your best music when you're in a happy mood or whether you're in a
down mood? I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when I'm happy, I'm probably not writing music.
Mm.
I'm probably doing something exciting and having a great time. It's those times where you're recollecting and maybe feeling vulnerable that I think you can write your best music.
Now, looking at the list of people that you've worked with, loads of people that I'm, like, very jealous of, straight away. Stevie Wonder, who is just... Well, Stevie Wonder.
Well,
Madonna.
Stevie Wonder.
Al Jarreau.
Al Jarreau, yeah. Oh. Well, both the Stevie Wonder and the Al Jarreau story are the same story, because that we ended up... we had a little band, a few of us, back in the 80s there, and we were doing very well. We ended up on a TV show. Tom Jones invited to do Tom Jones The Right Time.
Mm.
And recorded at Central TV and just had so many great guests. So we had a day with Stevie Wonder, a day with Al Jarreau, a day with Daryl Hall. You know, it just went on and on. So became a sort of worldwide success TV programme. Yeah.
People always say nice things about Tom. He's very good with these stories. I don't think I've ever heard... I mean, not that I know... I've nearly met Tom. This is my story. Nearly met Tom 3 times. One time I was too frightened to turn around because he was standing behind me.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to seem like I was going, that's Tom. I just stood there with my back to him and then he walked away. I completely missed him. But he's meant to be a really decent guy.
He's a sweetie. He's absolutely lovely to work with. Yeah, he's great. I've spent 10 years on the road with Tom, so I know, you know, we know the score.
Yeah.
And just a privilege to work with Tom. And again, it was, you know, I was in my 30s, so it was just a really nice time and having a good time on the road. And nothing too naughty, but just good lads on the road having a nice time and a drink.
Who would be your vocalist of choice? Do you sort of go, oof, you know, or
to work
maybe work with, and people you haven't worked with, who you would
people
have
who
to?
Haven't worked with, who I'd love to have worked with. Oh, there's so many, too many. I'd love to work with Prince. That'd be wonderful, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
great voices. I mean, they're all great voices, aren't they? That's why they're in that position, you know. Even, you know, like Tom's got a fantastic, Stevie's got, and they've got two very different voices as well.
Yeah.
Tom's got this operatic, loud, strong voice, and Stevie's got this voice level voice that's not loud, but it's got this textures, and so they're all brilliant. And same with Cat Stevens Youssef. He's He's got so many great tones in his voice and his delivery and the way he can handle people. Everybody's got something to offer.
And also with these guys, as they're getting older, they've still got tremendous voices. Some people don't. Some people, as they get towards their, I think it's like their 70s, or they can lose it in their early 50s, but these guys have got incredible voices, still going very strong.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Tom, at one point, we were on tour in Germany, I think it was, 90s, and his voice went. And we went, it was laryngitis.
Yeah.
And this is the strength of the man. On the gig that he lost his voice, I think we did 6 or 7 tunes, and then he had to bail out.
Yeah.
And then we had a day off. And then the next day was a gig, and he came out, and he was back to normal. He's just so strong and so powerful
that,
you know, steamed it off and got out there and back on the road again.
That's been Welsh, isn't it?
It is. It's either that or go down the mine.
You don't hear that much on the radio, do you? It's been Welsh. That's what does it. So Daryl Hall, Misha Paris has got an amazing voice.
Yes, I did her Black Angel album. I played wonderful. On her Black Angel album, yeah.
What a voice.
Yeah, great voice.
Need to hear more of her.
I know, yeah, you know. Well, that's what I'm saying. Look at the way the business has changed things.
Yeah, yeah.
She's, you know, she does other things now, and people can't release records. Because it's unless you're part of the universal operating system, you won't get a chance. Yeah. You know, and that's the trouble. Until they stop this monopoly on music and give young folks a bit more piece of the pie.
Got this album together because you had a catalogue of instrumentals over the years, and it's taken you until now to sort of get everything together for a debut. So although you've been in the industry for years and worked with
decades.
loads of people, don't say decades, a few years. It's taken till now. Why has it taken such a long time to get together?
I've always made instrumental tracks way back. Always, you know, even back when I had a Porter studio and a tape 4-track.
We took 4-track. Right.
So, you know, it's always been on my mind.
Yep.
And I've played in so many instrumental bands and stuff like that. So it's always been there. I recorded an album. There's a big record producer, a friend of mine, Nigel Wright, who produces all the Lloyd Webber stuff that I was involved with and stuff. And he paid for me to make an album. And I made that album with some great musicians and some who are on this album. And the new album, and I've still got that album, and I still haven't released it.
Yeah.
I've still got it, and I will release it, but I wanted to make something that was more me now.
Yeah.
And so I made this album, and I wrote it quicker, and that's why I think it works. I didn't sort of drag tunes up from when I was 21, like this other album is, which has some nice tunes, but I made it quick, I wrote it quick. And I wanted it to be an instant sort of feeling, like, you know, didn't have to work too hard to listen to it.
Now, this next track we're going to play, and we are going to come back after the news, because we're going to be talking about Evita as well.
Yep.
So tell us about this track and what number. It would be handy if you told me the number as
I'm
well.
I'm going to tell you the number.
Just move over.
Then it's number 2 on the on your...
It's also smooth.
Now, this track is called Dirty Boots.
Yep.
This signifies, track 2, this signifies the fact that he's on the run.
Mm.
And it features none other than the great John J.R. Robinson on drums, who played on Thriller for Michael Jackson. He played Off the Wall, the whole album, for Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
He was Quincy Jones's main man for... decades again. But he's also now the most recorded drummer in history.
Mm.
And he plays on this track, and I'm so pleased to have him. I did it all via the internet, would you believe?
Yeah.
Sending him my stuff via the internet, using emails to communicate with him, him sending him in it, me back and me putting it in the track. So I hope you enjoy it.